Crafty Garden Mom podcast. My name is Tanisha. If you're a new listener, welcome, welcome. Thanks for giving me a listen. And if you're a returning listener, welcome back. So I hope everyone is doing well. I know it has been a long time since I last recorded. Let me just start by saying I did record an episode right before Memorial Day and Audacity ate it. I think I've had these recording issues the last several episodes, and nothing I could figure out could retrieve that or recover that lost episode. And I was at a point where I was done. I was done with my computer. I was done with Audacity. I was done with all of it. And I just had to walk away or chuck my whole computer out the window. And yeah, so this is the next time that I have had really to collect my thoughts again and get everything going. Things have been very busy. I have a lot to catch you up on. I know I have received several emails and messages. Thank you for reaching out. I always appreciate that. And I'm always around. I don't completely disappear, although admittedly over the last year, I have made a concerted effort to do less on social media, not completely disappear from it, but just do less. Just to do less extra things in general to try and simplify my life. I was realizing for a while there that the clutter of things, and not just physical things, but the social media and all of the messaging that comes at you from there, was really just, it was making me less and less productive. Yeah, both creatively, at work, at home, whether it was true or not, I mean, you know, we all just go about our day and do what we've got to do to get through, and what needs to get done gets done somehow. But I wasn't feeling present in a lot of things that I was doing. And I felt in some ways it was taking away from the important things in my life. So anyway, long story short, I have pulled back on a lot of it, but I've never completely disappeared. I'm still on Instagram. Even if I'm lurking, I see all of your posts. Several times a day, I look through Instagram, Facebook, maybe once a day, sometimes a few more than that. It just depends. But I am around. And if you follow me on Instagram, I'm Crafty Garden Mom there. You will see that I post pictures, and that, you know, I said in the last episode, I'm sure, has pretty much replaced my blog. I don't really even blog anymore. It was just another one of those things for a while that I was just doing just to do, and I wasn't really feeling I was putting my heart in it. And I want to be doing things that I'm willing to put my heart into, including this podcast. And, you know, honestly, I still enjoy podcasting, but I really have to get in the mood for it and get to the point where I feel I have good content or some kind of content. It may or may not be good to you, but, you know, just podcasting just to podcast and talk just to talk isn't really where I'm at anymore. Anyway, I am here today because I did want to catch you up and let you know what's going on. And I may or may not get through everything that's been going on. So I'm in a good place in terms of wanting to do this a couple times this summer, just to bring you up to speed. We've got a lot going on and it's fun. But first, the main thing that quite a few of you have reached out to me about is my new job. So let's rewind back to April, late April. I recorded probably early to mid-April, right? And a few weeks after that, I was laid off from my previous job. And I have spoken about this on previous episodes, so it was no surprise to me. It shouldn't be a surprise to you. I knew it was coming. But of course, the day you are actually told you are no longer employed, it is a little bit of a shock. It's like, okay, you know, but by the time I packed up my things, because I was told, you know, this isn't a 2 weeks notice, it is effective immediately. And I was like, fine, and packed up the remaining things that I had in my office and drove home. And honestly, by the time I got home and walked in my house and called back my husband, because I did send him a quick text to let him know what was happening, but called back my husband, I was more than fine. It was a little too early in the day to break open the bottle of wine, but it did happen later that night. Yeah. And I had already come to peace with things. Like I said, I knew it was coming. I knew it was happening. So I wasn't depressed about it. I wasn't upset about it. In fact, I think I sent my husband, it's been a while now, a quick little video clip of me kind of dancing around the kitchen and him just replying back with a shake of his head. Yeah, because I was under the impression that I would essentially have the summer off and be able to, you know, clean out my house and do some stuff with the kids and just relax and do stuff. Let me also just add, we were fine financially, and my previous company was very fair and good to me in terms of a severance package and those kinds of things. So we were fine. It wasn't a, you know, oh my gosh, I have to find a job immediately because this is terrible. Now, 6 months later or so, yeah, that wasn't going to be the case. We are a two-income household, and it is, you know, just for anybody to go from two to one income, if you're, you know, if you've got bills that at bills and other things that rely on two incomes, then, you know, you can only, if you've got savings, that's fine, but you can only go on that for so long. Or make adjustments. And we would have figured all that out in that time period. But I guess my point is that we were fine for a good, good length of time. And we were much more at an advantage because this is something that I've known about and we have been able to plan for quite some time. Many people, you know, are told out of the blue that they're being laid off or fired or for whatever reason. So I consider myself very fortunate, and I'm very happy that we took measures quite some time ago to be able to not have to freak out when this happened, because we knew it was going to happen. So anyway, the next day, very next day, I got a call from a longtime coworker and colleague and someone who I'm very happy to be able to call a friend in this business and industry. We've worked together a long time. In fact, since day one with starting with my company, she and I have worked very closely together. There have been some long, long nights we have spent, I won't name her here, but in airport dungeons, essentially, pushing and moving magazines and books to open stores and just, yeah, we've been through it work-wise. So, and friendship-wise, you know, we have drunk bottles of wine together in Vegas and LA and San Francisco and all over the country. And I really, really do value her friendship and her even mentorship. You know, she's just a great person. Well, she gave me a call. She had worked on the distributor side in the publishing industry. And those of you who are new to the podcast, I worked as a corporate book buyer for 17 years for a company that does operates the bookstores and newsstands in airports around the country. Well, really around the world, but I was responsible for the U.S. and Canada. And she was the distributor for those books for years. And then her company went out of business about 5-6 years ago. And she went to work for a major publisher as an account manager. So she's been doing that ever since. Well, she'd also known, you know, we talked over the past year or so, because again, I consider her a friend as well as a colleague. She happened to be my account manager as well. So we've stayed in touch all this time. The very next day after I got laid off, she called me on my cell, and I thought she was just calling, you know, because she'd heard the news, because I hadn't really called people yet. People that I would have called in the industry were, again, people I considered friends. So I thought she was calling just to see how I was doing, all of that. And she was, but she was also calling to let me know that there was a potential job opportunity for me. And this was very unexpected. And for those of you who are not familiar with the publishing industry or the account management side of the publishing industry, this is an industry that has shrunk in terms of employee size, as well as sales wise, of course, in print books, but, you know, due to the digital age coming, with books and print media, job opportunities where, for example, a company the size of hers, her publishing company, might, when I first started, have had 40 to 50 account managers. Now there are maybe half that many, And they're still doing the same accounts. You know, there's still the same or more books being published. That's what we've laughed about over the last, you know, 5 years, is that while sales in print books have decreased, you know, with the digital component being added in, the number of books being published has certainly not. In fact, there are several years recently that it's increased quite a bit. So there's a lot fewer account managers having to sell the same or if not more books to stores. And yes, there are fewer Barnes and Noble stores. Borders is out of business. You know, Amazon, you know, has really grown the market share component of it. But there's still quite a few, if you look at it from a boots on the ground, one person having to do a territory, there's still technically a lot of territory to cover to try and sell in books. If you think of libraries, if you think of bookstores, independent bookstores, retailers like grocery stores, anybody, any place that sells books, there has to be a person to sell them those books. So yeah, so anyway, the biggest benefit for a lot of people in this industry is that for the most part, it is a home office opportunity. So you are, because you have a territory, an area. People who have larger accounts like Amazon and Target and Walmart tend to come out of New York. Now, that depends on who the publisher is. And anyway, that's neither here nor there, really. I don't know why I'm even going into that kind of detail. But anyway, she called me and let me know there was an opportunity that had just opened up, and she and her boss, Mary, who I have worked with almost the same number of years, I've known her a long time, and she and her boss were talking about me. And because of our relationship over the years and them knowing that I was no longer working for their customer, they felt I would be a very good fit for this position. And I was really surprised, because these kinds of positions in the industry very rarely come up anymore. I mean, this is the kind of position where people retire out. It's not, I wouldn't consider it a cushy job by any means, because there are a lot of things that go into it, but it's a job that people, if they're working for the right company, stay in a long time. And I'm learning that now that I have accepted the position that was offered. So long story short, within a month, almost exactly 1 month from being laid off, I was hired by Penguin Random House to work for their Penguin Young Readers division as an account manager. And I have a major, two very, very big accounts, very high profile in the company, which is why Mary specifically was wanting somebody who had a certain amount of experience on the retail side, like I had. So anyway, I was very flattered, and I was very humbled by some of the things, the complimentary things that they had to say about me. And when I met with people, it was very comfortable, because I had been working with a lot of these people for quite some time. You know, very proud to know that I had a very good reputation within the industry. It was something I'd suspected. That was something that my dad, who has worked in business all my life, and, you know, when he got started out of college, one of the things he told me when I graduated from college was, he said, you may have many, many jobs, and you may have one job that you keep for years and years and years, but never forget. He's like, you may not work with the best bosses. You will probably learn something. You should learn something from everyone you work with and for. He's like, but the best advice I can give you is have people speak well of you even when you're not around. He's like, that is what will get you ahead in business. And it was really interesting because I'm almost 43 years old, and for the first time, because I haven't had to apply for a job in 17 years, right? I have not had to apply for anything. I haven't had to interview for anything. Yeah. But what was really, really nice to learn was that it's true. It came to fruition because I had always tried to conduct myself in a certain professional way and relate to people. And even when I had to be kind of hard with people, or I don't want to say get in their face, but not always the nicest, because I had to get some things, some points across, you know, but I always was fair and worked well with people. And it was really, really neat to know that a new job was waiting for me, mainly because of that reputation that I'd had working with these people. And I mean, it was so gratifying to know when Mary said to me, yes, you have to fill out, you know, our formal application online, and you have to turn in your resume, but really just know that is all just a formality. As far as I'm concerned, you have the job. I mean, there was no interview with Mary. There was really no interview with her. When I went in and met with her boss, who is the president of the division, the first thing she said to me was, Mary had nothing but wonderful, glowing things to say about you, as well as several other people I've talked to in the company, who, as soon as I mentioned your name, they knew who you were, what you were about, and as far as I'm concerned, we're just about to have a nice chat about books. And that's what we proceeded to do. So I'm with, you know, a very powerful woman in the publishing world, and suppose going in there nervous for my first interview in 17 years, and it ended up just being a great conversation about books. And I called my husband, and then I called my dad, and I told him, you were right all these years. And he was just quiet. And he was like, did you think I was lying to you over 30 years ago? Yeah. So anyway, in a nutshell, that's what happened. It was really, really interesting and exciting and surprising, and all of those things wrapped into one, that a month after I got laid off, I had a new job, and I am so happy. I am working from home now. I have a home office. I have not had to commute any farther than downstairs to my office. And that is something that when I would commute, you know, about an hour a day, 2 hours a day, 1 hour each way, almost. That was one of the things I kept saying. If I ever go back to work again, I do not want to have this kind of commute. The best thing would be, especially right now with the kids and things going on, the best thing for me would be to be able to have a home office. And it came true. And to be able to stay in this industry and to work for the largest publisher in the industry is amazing. The people in this company are amazing. I mean, I honestly could not ask for more. Yes, it still would have been nice. There is a little selfish part of me that would have thought that thinks, you know, this would have been great if maybe it had come up in August, September, but you can't wish for that kind of stuff. And I'm certainly not going to spit in the eye of a great opportunity. Yeah. So I have spent the last few months getting up to speed with things. There is a lot to learn, so much to learn. and I'm learning a new side of the business. I have not worked on the publishing side before. So instead of being on the retailer side, now I am selling the books. Yeah, it's a great opportunity. I'm really excited about it. I love books. I love being in this industry. And honestly, if it had been any other industry that had offered me the position, I can pretty honestly say it would have taken me a lot longer to make the decision. The weighing of the taking the time off and taking some time off to do other things probably would have outweighed. I mean, unless they'd made me some huge, you know, offer, because it was with a group of people that I've worked with before and really like. It was with a company that has books I love to sell. Yeah, and I have two children and they are my guinea pigs for almost all of the titles except for the YA, the older young adult books. But Samantha and Maddie are, you know, very happy to be getting more, even more free books and advanced copies of books by their favorite authors and manuscripts. And I continue to still have a huge stack of books to read, specifically from Penguin Random House. What's great is that even though I'm on the Young Readers division, pretty much all of the books within the company are accessible to me. And it's mainly digital. Like, they don't print as many hard copy, advanced copies anymore. They'll do them for the buyers, like I used to be. But even those have been reduced over the years. We're all provided with an iPad that has a special app that is unique just to employees. And it has basically the full database of all of Penguin Random House's books, both backlist and frontlist and new releases. And yeah, if I had the time, I could sit and just read and read and read all day. Still, I still get to do it. It's even more part of my job because, you know, to be able to talk to these books, to my accounts, I have to read. So I am incredibly, incredibly happy. Of course, there is the daily drudge work of any job, the data entry, the filling out of reports and, you know, answering the emails and blah, blah, blah. But I am by no means complaining because I'm doing it all from home in a home office now. And yeah, I have absolutely no complaints whatsoever. I am very, very blessed and happy with this. So yeah, that's what you'll be hearing about when I do give a life update about work and it's crazy. That's what you'll be hearing about. So anyway, that, after 20 plus minutes, sorry, it went so long, is it in a nutshell. And I hope my happiness comes through in my voice. Like I said, because it's a new job, I have been crazy just trying to get up to speed with things. And it is definitely a business and I work for people who, you know, they expect you to get up to speed pretty quickly. You know, not a whole lot of allowances are made for knowing things, you know, especially when it really is just a matter of pulling the sales data, for example. So me not knowing how much we sold in my account last week, maybe the first week I could get away with it, but by the second and third week, I was expected to know that. And luckily, because I had already been doing that on the retailer side and needing to know what my store sales were, once I learned how their system works and how to pull that data, I was up and running and it was very easy. So the biggest concern I have on a daily basis is my wireless working right? I went to Maryland Sheep and Wool, which was at the beginning of May, just a few weeks after starting my job. And as I told my husband, and he just kind of rolled his eyes, I'm employed now, so I can go and spend money on yarn. I didn't have to go with the I'm laid off now, we're cutting back. And he was just kind of like, you haven't even received your first paycheck. Don't go hog wild. I said, no, I'll just go sheep wild. And I did buy more. than the last time I went, which was in 2014. We were on our Disney cruise in 2015 during Maryland Sheep and Wool. So it's been, had been 2 years. And as I look back, I don't remember buying a whole lot at Maryland Sheep and Wool in 2014. I have been knitting a lot more though in the last 6 to 8 months, quite a bit more. So I felt a little justified in treating myself to some new stash yarn. Cause I knew I would, if not be knitting it up right away, I would be more likely to use it than say if I was going to a quilt festival and buying a whole bunch of fabric when I have not cracked my sewing machine cover or taken it off in months and months and months. To me, that would be a waste. Well, you know, technically I really want to argue it's never a waste to buy pretty fabric. And I'm sure many of you could second and third me and on with that. But when you know you are not doing a particular craft at the moment and you buy a whole bunch of supplies for it, there is a bit of guilt, I think, that goes along with that. But I have been knitting quite a bit, so I didn't have much guilt to go and shop. And I did have a budget, and I had set aside, because I knew, I've known all along, of course, Maryland Sheep and Wool is the same time every year. So I had planned for some expense spending there. And I did. And I first went to the Jenny the Potter booth. And this one I was a little torn about because Jenny the Potter makes these really nice mugs. She's kind of like Instagram popular, Instagram Insta-famous, blogger famous. Other podcasters have featured her mugs and yarn bowls before, and that's, you know, what basically has hundreds of people lining up before the show even opens to get into her booth. And she sells out within the first couple hours of opening the show. In 2014, I kind of passed it up. I said, I don't want to get in that long line just for a mug. Well, along with knitting more, I have also been drinking a lot more tea. I still drink my Starbucks coffee. I still have a somewhat of an addiction to that, but I've cut that back to one a day, sometimes every other day. And the sometimes every other day is more because now that I'm no longer commuting and the Starbucks drive-through is no longer on route to work, and I'm not really even having to leave my house for several days at a time, I'm not going to Starbucks as often, because that was kind of my daily routine Monday through Friday, was to go through the Starbucks drive-thru before I got to work. And now I've been making more coffee at home because I'm like, it's just too much of a hassle to get in my car and go to the Starbucks. I'm so lazy. Anyway, it's better on my wallet. Less is coming out just for coffee. But I have been drinking more tea. My mom gave me some really nice, a variety of some teas to try. And there was Tazo, I think it's called Wild Orange or Sweet Orange. And my favorite is the Passion Tea from Tazo. There is the Stash Lemon Ginseng Tea that I enjoy. And I love mint teas. So the Peppermint Tea. And there's another one, I think it's called Mint Medley. I don't think that's by Stash. But anyway, there's several teas that I've been trying. And so I have been using more of my mugs at home versus the Starbucks cups. I've been using my different mugs. And several of the podcasts I've been watching have raved about the prettiness of having a Jenny the Potter mug. And yes, they are an investment. You know, she's a hand crafter, and it is not easy. If you've ever tried pottery, it is not easy to make a mug. It is just not, especially with the handle. I think if it doesn't have a handle, it's a cup, right? Anyway, so I thought, you know, I'm going to treat myself to one. I have been using mugs more, and it would be nice. She does unique, exclusive patterns to the different shows she goes to. And so I got in the line when I got to Maryland Sheep and Wool. That was the first line I got into. And it was pretty quick to get into her booth and to pick out. I was in line early enough to actually be able to get some selection, to see there was actually some selection. And I ended up buying two mugs because there was one with the sheep, the fat sheep, that was very cute. And there was a skein of yarn in between these fat sheep. And then she had an exclusive, not just to knitting, but to Maryland mug that had crabs with knitting yarn that they were holding in a blue glazed mug. And I just thought, you know, this is really unique, not just to knitting as a knitter, but to being a Maryland knitter, because she's had the Chesapeake Bay blue crabs on it. So anyway, I treated myself to two mugs, was a little less than $100 light, and I'd only been at the show for about 10 minutes. That's what I think when I texted my husband. I've already blown a little less than $100 on two mugs. Yeah, I told you, they're not cheap. And I've only been here 10 minutes. Now, the line to get into the booth was not long, but then the line to check out and pay was very, very long. But I weathered it. And then I walked around in the same area of the pavilion that Jenny the Potter was in and window shopped a little bit. And then I went into the Miss Babs line. I figured, you know, let me get the two longest lines you can stand in out of the way, and then I will spend the rest of the show walking around leisurely. I decided to get him out of the way because I figured, you know, I'm just going to get tired and maybe a little cranky with the crowd, because the crowd built and built and built. And that's when I feel less like standing in a line versus when I'm fresh and I haven't been annoyed by people bumping into me and strollers hitting my legs and all of that kind of stuff that makes you a little bit cranky at a show after a while. So I got the lines out of the way, and Miss Babs' line was even longer than Jenny the Potter's line. But I have already spoken at length about how much I love Miss Babs' yarn. So to me, that was worth it as well. And I found several skeins of yarn of Yauza, which is like over 500 yards of light DK weight yarn. And I'm actually knitting the hitchhiker shawl with one of them. It is the Miss Babs Yauza in the Sleeping Beauty colorway. And this is teals, and it goes from basically a navy blue down to a very pale blue, and then a deep raspberry down to a pale, like a pale pink, then tones of gray in it. It's very, very pretty. A little bit in the cooler tone side than I usually wear. I think for a shawl, it'll look very nice. I couldn't resist it. It was just so luscious and beautiful. The saturation of her colors is just, it's too hard to resist. And like, you get in her booth and it's just sensory overload in some ways, because it's just amazing. Sorry about that. I was interrupted by the phone. I will try and edit that out. But anyways, I was talking about the hitchhiker shawl. So I've knit this before with Miss Babs Yauza, and the Sleeping Beauty colorway is just absolutely lovely. I, once again, really, really enjoying this knit. And I don't think I've posted, it's been a while since I've posted some knitting progress pictures. And actually that will bring me to, let me bring you up to date with some of the crafty stuff I've got going on. So I finished my Mrs. Blanding's shawl, and I did post pictures of that. I will, refer you to my Instagram. You'll see that picture there. I also finished another shawl. This is the Kayla shawl, and I don't think I've posted a finished picture of it, which I will do. But I knit this out of Sweet Georgia Yarns Superwash DK, which is 100% superwash merino wool. And I use the pistachio colorway, which is a very pretty green. I would say it's not quite a lime green. There's less yellow in it than lime tends to have. Like when you, not actual lime, the fruit, but when they kind of do things that they, colors of things that they call lime, I think a lot of times they have a more yellow base in them, and this does not. It's a little cooler. However, it's not quite like a Kelly green either. So, but it was just very, very pretty color, and I really like it on. It was a great knit. If I had the time, I would knit this one again. It's a very pretty shawl. It has quite a few yarn overs that creates a pretty three-hole eyelet throughout the whole shawl, as well as it very cleverly, as you're knitting it, you are the first few stitches of each row, you are basically putting on a decorative border on two ends of the shawl. It's a boomerang shaped shawl where it's a very wide and long stretched out triangle shape, which is nice for the drape. And I actually am thinking of knitting more shawls in this shape because it makes it easier to drape around your neck, and it doesn't quite look so much like a bandana as when you knit a true triangle or an isosceles triangle shaped shawl where the ends aren't really that long. So you end up kind of with a bandana look, and with this boomerang, which is more stretched out on the ends, it gives you longer tails, which make it nicer to drape around your neck, and you get kind of the scarf shawl look. But it looks a little fuller than if you were just to knit like a really long rectangle. Anyway, so I really enjoyed knitting the Kayla pattern. I do recommend that one. It's not a difficult knit, even with the applied, not the applied, the edging worked in, as you knit it. Once you learn that stitch and practice it a couple times, it's very, very simple to do. And there's a good description of it both in the pattern. But to check myself to make sure I was doing it right, I did Google it, or not Google it, I searched it on YouTube and quickly found several videos of people demonstrating how to do it. And what I watched one or two of those, and I was on my way, and it was very easy through the rest of the pattern. So those are the two finished objects. And then I mentioned I'm working on my hitchhiker shawl, which is by Martina Bem. And then I'm also working on a pair of socks. I think I've determined I will try and keep a pair of socks on the needles at all times and have that as just a mindless knit, and then be working on maybe another project, like a shawl or a scarf or a hat or something like that, as well. And these are my Dobby is a Free Elf striped socks, and this is yarn from the Nomadic Yarns, which is an Etsy shop. And they have some great colorways. She's got a great sense of putting colors that you may not always, that may not instinctively look like they go together, but she's very smart about putting a neutral or two in her striping that helps blend and bring them all together. And she did, several months ago, she did a Harry Potter series of colors, and I managed to snag several skeins, and one of my favorites was the Dobby is a Free Elf colorway. And I've posted a picture of these in progress on Instagram, so you can take a look. And I am just about to turn the heel on both socks, so almost there. I've been distracted by some things. Even in my downtime, I've been doing other stuff. I've been getting Sam ready for camp, which he's at this week, and just doing some other stuff. So I haven't worked on them in a while, so I need to pick those back up again. But anyway, so that's what I've got going on. I have also creatively been doing a little bit more fun stuff in my Happy Planner. That's the one I've decided I'm sticking with for a little while. I have mentioned that I do prefer using a paper planner, And while I've tried out, like I've done Franklin Covey, I've done the Day Planner, I've done not Erin Condren, but there was another one, and that thing was too big and too heavy. I think it was Emily Lay. Yeah, I think so. It was a pretty planner. It was very nicely laid out. It was just too clunky feeling for me to carry around. And then Me and My Big Ideas, which is a very popular scrapbooking company and well known. They have quite a few stickers on selection in A.C. Moore and Joann and Michaels. They came out with about a year ago now, maybe a little bit more, what they're calling the Happy Planner. And it's not a small planner, but you can easily take out pages, remove pages to make it thinner. And there are rings. I think they're called arc rings. I don't know what arc stands for, but anyway, right now it's working for me. And there's quite enough room to write in both on the month page spread as well as the weekly page spread. By day, the things that you've got to do. I like that there are three sections for each day. So on the top section, I write my work to-dos. The middle section, I write my personal slash home to-dos. And then on the bottom, I write my menu plan for the week. So each day, I'll write in what we're having for dinner. And that's how I plan out how to grocery shop. I will write in something like, need to clean out the fridge, need to sweep out underneath the dryer, just little things like that of to-do things that I want to try and get done daily. I've kind of set a goal for myself to do w at least one small, like takes less than 10 to 15 minutes, household task a day just to kind of keep up with some of the decluttering I've already been able to do. To try and keep on that so it doesn't get recluttered again. I still have areas of the home that I need to declutter. And when I brought home a whole bunch of books and stuff from my office at my previous job, that's all still sitting in the dining room. So I still need to go through all of those boxes. And basically, now it's been 2 months and I haven't pulled out, I think I've pulled out one or two books for my kids that I knew were in those boxes, and I found those before we went on vacation. And I haven't pulled out anything else. I mean, I'm very lucky in that even though I brought home my whole Rolodex, thinking, okay, in the fall when you start your job hunt, you'll go through your Rolodex like people say you should. I've been lucky. I haven't had to do that. So do I keep the Rolodex? What do I do? I don't know. Like most of, kind of like college, or high school, most of the people that you're still going to communicate with or that are still your friends, you already have their contact information maybe in your phone or in your planner, your address book. So you don't necessarily need that scrap of paper that you kept in high school with their number, right? If you're still talking to them, you've got their number. So I don't know. I'm sure I will hold on to it for at least a year and see what happens. But I do need to go through those boxes. There's just a lot of papers that I just dumped in there that once I go through them, I'll just start chucking because, again, if I haven't needed it in the last 2 months, it's highly doubtful that I will need it again, ever. So anyway, those are the kinds of things that I'm just jotting down in that third bottom section of my planner. And so far it's been working. Like you can go on YouTube, you can go on Instagram and use the hashtag happy planner, and all kinds of people who are, doing their planning this way, will come up. And there are some crazily heavily decorated pages. Like worse, I can barely even see the content of what they've got going on. And you can tell for them, it is a lot more about the creative decorating part. For me though, I have always wanted, if I'm going to have a planner, I have always felt I need to keep the focus on the purpose of it, the productiveness of it to help me stay on task and know what I've got going on, what I've got coming up, what I need to do. some of my goals and things like that. There is a section in here where I have, you know, my you have lined paper that they sell, and I purchased some of that, and I have notes, and like I'm reading my podcast notes from it. And it's all in this one planner. There's, you can add pockets to it, and I have like just random papers and, you know, camp information, and I'm looking at a health form here, just things like that, that you can just stick in here. But if you go on and you see all the decoration, you can kind of get a little overwhelmed by that. And then of course there's a whole now industry of Etsy sellers selling, you know, customizable planning stickers and all kinds of doodads and fancy schmancy stuff. And some of it's really pretty, and I have purchased some of it. You know, some of it's functional. There was one lady on Etsy. I'm trying to remember. I'll look her name up and try and put her in the show notes, because it's been a little while since I purchased from her. She sells really long stickers that run along the edge of your page, and where you can check off the different routines that you have that you want to get done for the day. And I have found that sticker pretty helpful because it doesn't take up space within the to-do list section of my daily planner. So some of it's been working. I've tried that. Like this week I had a little bit more time, and I was just sitting watching, I think, a Gilmore Girls episode, and I was, you know, had some washi tape and some of the stickers I've purchased, and I decorated my pages a little bit more. But if I look on previous weeks, there are some weeks I didn't use a single sticker. I was all writing of stuff I had to do and get done, and I spent no time decorating. So it fluctuates. There are other weeks where I have a couple stickers, and like this week, it seems it's just, for me, it's heavily decorated, but it's not really very, very heavily decorated. The washi tape that I used makes it look a little bit more colorful and that kind of thing. But yeah, I don't think I spent collectively more than 5 minutes putting down the washi tape and a few stickers. But anyway, to each his or her own, right? Like you do you, and you do what you need to do. For me, I need the pages to be a little cleaner and less cluttered with stickers and stuff most weeks, so that I can very clearly see what I need to do and get done and the appointments I have. If it works for you, then decorate to your heart's content. In some ways, it is fun, because if you don't have a whole lot of time to do other crafts that week, you know, I have not had time to sew, I have not had time to really do a whole lot of art journaling, this is a way just to have a little taste of doing something creative and fun to pretty up your day, if you like, as well as make you feel like you are getting things organized. Because sometimes I don't always stick to my list. Sometimes I see on there, you know, spend 15 minutes cleaning your desk, and I totally ignore that. And my desk stays messy. So, you know, again, it only works if you work it, but again, having it there can be helpful as well. So that creatively, those are the things that I've been doing. I have been watching quite a few podcasts. Inside Number 23 is one of my favorites. She does, Katie is, she lives in England, and I will admit, I love listening to her accent, but she also has a beautiful singing voice. She spent some time on the stage. She has a background in theater, which is kind of one of my loves. And so every once in a while, she sings some songs from favorite musicals of mine. But she's also very creative. Her first love is knitting, so there's a lot of knitting content. However, she's also a very, very good seamstress, and she sews quite a few of her own clothes. And more often, she has included a segment in her podcast called Sew, S-E-W, What? So What? And she talks about the dresses she's making or the tops, and she's kind of helping getting a little bit of my sewing mojo desire back. And yeah, so I have several projects in mind that are kind of on the back burner, but I will get there. I will get back to my beloved sewing machine. Yeah, I try not to feel bad about it, but I don't. I don't feel bad. I'm still doing creative things, just not sewing right now. Anyway, Katie is delightful. She has she's very, very much into a 40s, 50s look, both for her personal look. So she does her makeup and her hair that way. The clothes she wears are very vintage, that era. And it's not an affectation. Like, it's not just for the podcast. That's how she lives her life. And she's, you know, even the background you can see behind her, she likes antique furniture from that time period and jewelry. She has a really pretty, not a mood board, but like a cork board that's covered with fabric, and you can see her vintage pins stuck in it. Like, just aesthetically, her podcast is very pleasing. And, you know, as someone who doesn't live that life and lifestyle and live, you know, wear those kinds of clothes, I don't really have the figure for that. To see someone being able to do that and be very comfortable living her daily life that way. She works at a perfectly normal job. I think she does something in IT, but that's how she lives her life, you know, and I think it's very cool, and she's a very cool person, and a very easy to watch podcast. She also has a very cute little pug dog, Rolly, who makes an appearance usually towards the end of the podcast. So, another favorite of mine are two Canadian ladies, the Grocery Girls. I love them. I love them. I want to meet them one day. They are hysterical. Like, they're sisters, and their family owns a local to them. They're in, I think it's Edmonton, Alberta, Canada, a local grocery store, and it's their family business. And they work, I think, in the office doing, you know, buying and purchasing and payroll and things like that for their family business. And they're also very, very prolific knitters, like big time knitters. And they're also huge enablers. And they are very pro Canadian, yarn dyeing and, you know, small business, which I think is great, because it's a great way to get exposed to Canadian products and goods that are fabulous. And yeah, so, and they, like I said, they're just a hoot to watch. They're very funny. They bring up, all kinds of fun things, about their daily lives and their knitting lives. And yeah, they're just very, very fun to watch. But just be warned, they are heavy, heavy enablers. And they're not just enablers of like random stuff. Like, they bring it. They find some really cool, interesting things, mainly to do with the yarn community, and in Canada. But yeah, they're huge enablers. I have spent more than a few dollars on things that they have recommended, and I don't think a single purchase that I have made after their recommendation have I regretted. I've regretted it pocket-wise maybe a little bit, but they have not steered me wrong yet. So that's the Grocery Girls podcast. And another one is Andre Sue Knits. Andy is kind of local to me. She lives in the Richmond, Virginia area. And I met her briefly at Maryland Sheep and Wool. She's so sweet. She's kind of a quiet, shy person. A lot of times when you hear, like, if I were to tell you, yeah, I'm kind of shy, you might not believe me. And I can be kind of, I wouldn't describe myself as shy. I wouldn't. I don't even really describe myself as introverted. But I am very comfortable alone and being alone and with myself. And I don't get lonely being by myself. I don't feel I need to have a whole lot of people around me. But if I am around a lot of people, I'm okay with that too. I don't usually get uncomfortable. Anyway, Andre, you can tell her demeanor and everything. She's very quiet and unassuming, but she is so knowledgeable about knitting and spinning and just creatively. And recently she has been hand painting what are called sock blanks. And these are basically, if you machine knit a maybe 6 to 8 inch wide length of knitted fabric, and then in, you know, just basically a natural color, and then you dye it, and she paints it with absolutely beautiful designs. And I was able to snag one, because when she does an update on Etsy, they go, and I'm not kidding you, they go in 90 seconds. Like, she might put up a dozen of these sock blanks, one each of each, because they're hand painted. And they, if you are not a fast finger, you will get cart jacked in a heartbeat. Like, you have to have your Etsy account set up to immediately check you out, all of that. The last time I tried to get one, for some reason, it was when I clicked on buy it now, it was going back to making me log back into my account. So in the time I did that, I lost the sock blank. So annoyed, because it was a really nice one too. It was a really good one. Anyway, I have managed in the past to snag one of her blanks, and it has a butterfly pattern on it, and it is beautiful, and I haven't knit with it yet. So I had no need to be buying another one, but they're just so beautiful. And she's very creative with her ideas. And, you know, honestly, the part of the reason I went to buy another one was, she is very open in the fact that she's only doing this as long as she's enjoying it. And I have much, much respect for that. There have been several comments made on her YouTube and her Instagram of, no, keep knitting, you know, or keep doing this and do it longer. And how come we get cart jack? And, you know, kind of people get a little whiny and complaining about it. But I tend to go with, you know, she's making these when she feels like it. She's putting them up for sale, like what she has been able to do. She's a mom. She has three kids. She homeschools. You know, this is not her business. You know, she's not doing this because she needs to put food on the table. She's doing it for pure enjoyment. And, you know, she enjoys doing it and then selling them and maybe having a little extra pocket money, I guess. So I guess part of me is kind of like, she's not answerable to us, you know. The business transaction, yes, if I purchase a sock blank from her, I expect to receive it because I've paid her. And that absolutely 110% she fulfilled her part of that deal. But she's under no obligation to me to produce as many as I expect her to, you know, and like, you know, just because I didn't get the original unique hand-painted sock blank I wanted and I got cart jacked. I'm more bitter at the person who cartjacked me. I don't know who that person is, but you know what I mean? Like, or I'm more annoyed at Etsy because as long as I've been a member, all of a sudden now you're expecting me to log back in when I want to make a purchase and I'm on a timeline here. I'm not upset with Andy, you know, like it's people get, I don't know if you've noticed it, but people get a little too, I don't know what the word is, tacky. In their, you know, in their expectations of people who are making handmade goods. It's like, what do you expect? You expect them to crank out a commercial sized quantity of something that is individually handmade. And yeah, I fully understand if people get annoyed when they order something and it doesn't come, and that happened to me actually, I won't name the company, but I ordered an item off of Etsy and it was custom made and I paid for it. It never arrived. And the only answer I got from this Etsy shop was, well, once it leaves our house, it's out of our hands. That was it. That was the only communication she was willing to give me. You'll need to contact the U.S. Postal Service. And I was just kind of like, okay, I get it. You know, you are a small business. I get that. But to me, that's still not customer service. Like, I have paid you for something and that's the only answer you're willing to give me. Like, yeah, I was not happy. So needless to say, I have not done business with that company or that business again. There are plenty of other places to go for similar items. But anyway, don't want to harp on a negative. So it's just to me a little funny and interesting how tacky people can get with their responses and the expectations and like the entitlement that's there. Like, it's just, yeah, like you'll see after she's had an update, you know, there are people who will come on Instagram and say, blame her for not being able to get one of her blanks. And again, yes, I completely get it. You wish that she was able to hand paint 50 to 60 to 200 of these, or for her to be able to predict how many she needs to make to be able to ensure every single person who comes to her site is able to get one. And not just that, but the one they wanted, the design they specifically wanted. I'm being very sarcastic right now. But sometimes the snarky and just outright rude comments of people really annoy me. And it is sometimes all I can do not to engage. And part of my mantra has been disengage, disengage, disengage. Do not get into it with these people, because I have just started to firmly believe that somebody who already has that mentality to post something like that, you are not going to change their mind. You are only feeding their need to vent, their need to be right, their need to get what they want when they want it. Okay. And believe me, I have had my, I want what I want when I want it moments. I'm kind of a princess in a lot of things. Ask my husband. Sometimes, it's just a little embarrassing for us all when we let it show. I'm not too proud to say I've had those moments. And I'm also not too proud to say I've had to apologize sometimes for having that moment. I don't think I've ever, I shouldn't say ever. I very rarely see that same person who's made that entitled or tacky comment come back and apologize for their behavior, to come back and say, you know what? I was having a bad moment. I realized my comment was rude or tacky or, entitled. Just be very honest about what your comment was. I don't think I've ever seen somebody come back and say that. I have seen some people come back and say, I'm sorry I called you a blank. I shouldn't have done that. I shouldn't have gotten that personal in my comments. But especially when you're talking political stuff, right? If you look at the comments on the political, I take it back. Don't look. Don't look. Don't look at the comments on any of that stuff if you want to just not have your head explode, right? Anyway, so that's what I've been watching. Andre Sue Knits, all that to say, her podcast is called Andre Sue Knits, and it is very good. I think she's kind of on a summer hiatus, but she's, taking a little time in between episodes, take a little longer in between episodes. Aren't we all? Well, not all of us, but raising hand right here. Anyway, what I've been reading quite a bit. Let's see. The Boys in the Boat was one of my favorite reads so far. And this is a nonfiction book. I don't often read a whole lot of nonfiction, but I'm very happy to say I have been reading some good ones when I do read nonfiction. I tend to enjoy nonfiction that reads more like a story than just kind of textbook-ish nonfiction. And The Boys in the Boat is a story about the 1936 rowing team that went to the 1936 Olympics. I listened to this one on audio and it was very well done. The author really puts you in that time and place. It's set out in Washington State area, and these young men going to college and some of the hardships, especially of the time, all of them grew up during the Depression or right before and then during the Depression. And you get just some of the mentality. One of the main characters, Joe, literally his family left him as a young boy. I think he was 9 or 10 years old. He's standing on the porch and his father and stepmother and her kids and their young kids just drove away. Like his father was like, well, we can't bring you along too. Basically, you eat too much and you'll have to make your way here on the house. We're going, you know, to find, I need to find work elsewhere. You'll be fine. You'll make it. And they just literally drove off, and he had to make his way. You know, no running water, no electricity. But the mentality of people at that time, it wasn't like so dramatically different than we have today, but very rarely will you hear about people just literally driving off and leaving their kid behind. Like, you and not have them be on CNN. You know what I mean? Like, it's just, now, there are thousands and thousands of neglected children. Yes, I totally know that. But yeah, it the way the author wrote the story of each, you know, of each of these, he goes into more depth on one or two characters, and there is a main character in the book, which I think is also good in a nonfiction story like this, because it allows you to kind of have an anchor, somebody to root for, you know, versus learning all about all of the different people on the rowing team. You kind of have one focused person, you know, you end up rooting for the whole team, but you're rooting for this one individual in particular because you know a lot about his backstory and the hardship he went through to get where he is. I learned a lot more about rowing than I have ever known in my life. It was kind of cool. My alma mater is Syracuse University, and I did know at the time Syracuse has a very well-known Olympic rowing team, not Olympic, but rowing team that has gone to the Olympics many times. And I actually dated a rower for a little bit of time when I was in college. So I knew a little bit about rowing, but I knew certainly even in college that I didn't have the right body weight to get in one of those little boats. They are very little. When you get down to them, they are very little boats for all those grown men to be in. Yeah, very little. Anyway, so I got to hear about Syracuse and their rowing days back in the 20s and 30s, and just a really interesting cast of characters, and again, the hardships that they went through to get to the Olympics was just, it was a fascinating read. It read very fast. I think I listened to the whole thing commuting around and running around and doing errands in like 3 days. It took no time because it was an absorbing and good story. Even when you heard the descriptions of the boat and how it was built, the boys in the boat, how it was built, the author was very good about building a story into that. And the person, you know, the people like who came out of Germany, or the boat builders, you know, the man who came from Europe to Canada and designed the boats that that are now used internationally in rowing to this day. And he gives the backstory to that. And even that's interesting to learn. So I highly, highly recommend The Boys in the Boat. And I don't have the author in front of me right now, but I promise you, if you just go into Amazon and type in Boys in the Boat, it will pop up just as you're writing boys. It's that popular and well-known of a book. I believe it's still on the New York Times bestseller list. And now with the Olympics just a few weeks away, I am sure it will rise back up there again and continue to stay on there. The other book that I read, Razor Girl by Carl Hiaasen. He's one of my favorite comedic fiction authors. And it's been a while since I read a Hiaasen, just basically too many books, too little time. But I think in college and, you know, in my 20s, I think there was a period there where I just went and blew through all of Carl Hiaasen's backlist at one point. I've read just about everything by him. I don't think I've read his children's books, but he's just funny. He does comedic fiction. He's one of the best, in my opinion, because he sticks to the same place. The author, Carl, is from Florida, and he is so good about writing the absurdity of Florida. And how, you know, it's one of the world's favorite destinations, the state, you know, being not just Disney World, but it's a great destination because of the beaches and the sun, and it's always warm. And particularly people who live in cold climates love to go there. But if you live there, you know how absurd thing, just crazy stuff goes on in the state of Florida. In fact, I think it was either the New York Times or the Washington Post that had a great article about the absurdity of Florida and how just the craziest stuff comes out of that state. And if you don't live in the United States, you may not be aware of it, but many people in the U.S. kind of just kind of shake their heads at the antics that come out of, that seem to come out of Florida. The Orlando shooting and all of that serious stuff, notwithstanding. But Carl Hiaasen is very good about building a great cast of crazy wackadoo characters, who, you know, just from all different walks of life. And he does a very good job in Razor Girl. In fact, this is probably one of my recent favorites of his, because he's also very good about writing really smart, funny broads. Like, and I've always liked a broad in a movie or in a book or just in life. Like, just a woman who doesn't take anything from anybody, speaks her mind, gets things done, you know, just makes it happen and is funny, or, you know, also has a, probably a, many times has a heart of gold, just things like that. But, and he writes in this book, Razor Girl, essentially is a woman who, I'm trying to think of her name now. Hold on. It's been a while since I read it. Mary Mansfield, and that's her name in the book. She is a con artist, essentially, and she's working a con where her, she rear ends the back of her, the person she's supposed to quote unquote hit, the back of his car, and they come over, get out of their car and come over to her. And she is giving herself a bikini wax with a razor when they come over. And so she kind of, she's very, you know, attractive. She's a very attractive kind of, if you picture like a bombshell look right to her. So she kind of bedazzles these men. It's always men that she rear ends. That person is either kidnapped for their money or whatever. So at first, you know, she's kind of one of those, she's the bad character, but the more you get to know her and hear her talk and the things, what she believe, what, right and wrong, you know, because usually she's rear ending low life characters to begin with. So, or people who are also conning and scamming people out of millions of dollars, where she's trying to get like a couple thousand. So anyway, so she's kind of one of those bad ne'er-do-well characters you grow to love, kind of hooks up with this detective, or he's a former detective who is now on basically roach patrol. Like, he is the health inspector for the Florida Keys. And I don't want to give too much away, but just all kinds of like hijinks ensue that seem very unrelated, but Carl Hiaasen does a very, very good job of showing you how each of these characters relate to one another in some way. They may never meet, really have anything to do with each other, but it's kind of cause and effect, because one character does this, another character off scene ends up having to do this. So, and he's very, very good about that. I mean, he must have a post-it board in his office as he's working on his books that are just crazy with all these, with these characters. But the thing is a lot of times authors will write a whole bunch of characters and it's very hard for you to keep up. And I will admit, for part of this book, it was a little difficult to kind of get up reminded of who was who. But as the story unfolded and he kind of, you really built what was going on and the mystery behind it and how you were going to solve it, how he was going to solve it, it clicked. It, like, at some point it just all clicked and you kind of knew, okay, these are the crazy reality TV stars that are, you know, you could totally tell they were kind of built off of Duck Dynasty. And these are the con artists. And yeah, so if you've read Carl Hiaasen, you know what I'm talking about in terms of just the mishmash of Florida crazy characters that he somehow puts together and make work. I really enjoy this. When I finished the book, I was like, okay, this is one of his classic to me Hiaasen books, because I'm still thinking about a couple of the characters just in a funny way. He's also very good about one-liners, just funny one-liners, and just, yeah, there's some Southern colloquialisms that are in there that you're like, I have never heard that line before, but it is hilarious. Yeah, so if you're looking for a fun, funny, pretty quick read, I would say fairly quick. Like I said, there are quite a few characters, and it may take you a little bit to get into it in terms of learning who everybody is. But once the story gets going about a third of the way in and you've learned all the main characters, he does a very good job of, again, like I said with Boys in the Boat, focusing on one or two of the main characters, and everybody else is kind of ancillary and just provides comedic relief to the story. So that's Razor Girl by Carl Hiaasen. There's a couple other books I was going to talk about, but I think I'll probably save those for another time. They weren't as enjoyable as The Boys in the Boat and Razor Girl were for me recently. And that's about it, which I think is enough. It's about 20 minutes longer than I had expected to go. I'm going to apologize ahead of time and tell you I'm not going to do much, if at all, any editing to this. I know there was a phone call in there. I know there have been a lot of ums in this episode, but part of the way I am trying to make sure I can get something recorded as well as just get it out there for you is to reduce the amount of time it takes me to post it. So fingers crossed that Audacity does not decide to act up at the last minute, but I will talk to you all very soon. I do already have show notes prepared for another episode with more stuff that I wanted to talk about. I've received some emails with questions that are very good about just day-to-day things. I have been in the last couple days doing more crafty stuff. I am pretty determined to do some sewing, especially since Samantha will be taking a sewing class for a couple weeks coming up. She's doing a sewing camp. And yeah, so I'm hoping to be able to sew alongside her when she gets home. So there might be some of that coming too. So anyway, thank you so much for listening and keeping up with me. And if you want to reach out to me, please send me an email at TanishaQuilts@yahoo.com. You can message me on Facebook. You can reach out to me on Instagram and Twitter. I am Crafty Garden Mom there. I am also Tanisha on Ravelry, if you are on Ravelry. So friend me there and Goodreads. So I'm around. I am reachable. And I would love to hear from you. Thank you again so much for listening. I will talk to you soon. Bye-bye.